Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm Jeff Howard, and I'm very happy to have Renee Gannon O'Gara with me. Hey, Renee.
Hello.
All right. We just had an awesome discussion. Wonderful conversation. It is the podcast before this one. And you should absolutely listen to it. Listen to the whole G-damn thing. I love taking the Lord's name in vain for some reason. Yeah. I went G-damn there. But we were talking about Renee and his film Donut, which was... It had its world premiere at Film Invasion Los Angeles last year, 2023. Won a couple of groovy awards. Won the Grand Jury Award for Best Feature Film Drama. Won one of the actors. Won Best Performer in a Supporting Role Drama for Pavly Saranetsky. Wonderful. Actually, it's funny. Did we not have... We probably didn't have a cast award. But I would have loved for you to get... I kind of annoys me not to have a cast award sometimes. Oh, that's a tangent. All right. Yeah. Fuck the tangents. And we can curse, although you don't curse much. No, like me. I'm much less classy.
Well, I just like because you started the first podcast with cursing right at the top. At this time, you started with G-damn.
I started with G-damn. I know. I think because I said donuts fucking great. Or what did I say? Motherfucking
like
great.
Yeah, yeah.
Some, you know, I mean, fuck doesn't have the level of impact it once did.
Yeah.
But I can remember when you didn't hear it all the time.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm dating myself. Listen to the podcast before this. Learn all about Renee and his film Donut. Watch Donut on TV High. Just go to watchtvhigh.com and watch the G-damn film. The G-damn motherfucking wonderful film. And I say all that because now we're not going to talk about Renee or his film. We're going to talk about his taste in film. He's going to answer the four questions, which are: name three favorite films, name an underrated film, name an overrated film, and name a lesser known film that people should seek out. And this is where I shut the fuck up and I just listen to you talk about your favorites.
Okay. All right. So what was the first one is for...
Just three favorites. And I'll interrupt and say it's intentionally worded. It's not like the three best films ever. It's just three films you love.
Yeah. So I'll go a little bit off recency bias. On Criterion Channel, they had some pre-code movies up there for a while. And there were a few... William Powell and Kay Francis movies, or a couple William Powell and Kay Francis movies that, those are the actors that were, I thought were just incredible. One of them is called One Way Passage, and it's basically on a steamer boat. These two people sort of meet and fall in love. And one of them is a arrested, murderer who is on his way to be hung at San Quentin. And the other one is the Kay Francis character is on her way to a sanitarium because she's very sick and she's gonna die pretty soon, or it's unclear what her illness is. But basically, they're falling in love and they're not telling each other this, but they're both going to be dead very as soon as they land. Basically, is sort of the idea. And then it's hijinks ensue a little bit on the boat, but. It's very romantic. It's got some very funny bits, and it's like just the pre-code movies. There's something really remarkably contemporary about a lot of them, which is so interesting because as you get into the early, when the code starts being enforced, all these movies start getting really conservative and locked down, and they feel more old-fashioned now. And when you watch the ones that people were making before, there's something very free and like open and realistic
about them. Pre-code, pre-MPAA, pre-ratings.
Pre-ratings.
So the USA's cinema community, whatever, sounds like they were more creative and European before the codes.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, there was also like a lot of... European filmmakers that were coming, Germans that were coming, because this is also, you know, when the Nazis are
starting to take over. All the Jews had to run out of there, and there a lot of Jews in German cinema back then.
Yes, and also just and just artists that
artists who were not going to live long if they stay.
But anyways, the this is like 1932 or something. But I just thought it was really incredible. And they had some other movies. There was another movie that those two did together called Jewel Robber, which is also, I'm going to sneak that in as a secret second suggestion, because I also thought that was really great. Or Jewel Robbery, it might be called, something like that. And anyways, that one's more comedic and but also very, very fun. Okay, so that's a big one for me recently. I think what's another good one? One filmmaker who's really important to me is Fassbinder, Rainer Werner Fassbinder. And I think I like a lot of his movies. The one that sticks to the top of my head as my favorite is Fox and His Friends, where Fassbinder is also acting as the sort of the lead role, but it's a beautiful movie visually. It's shot by, who's the cinematographer? Who is it? Muller? Or it's, he ended up moving to the States and shooting with, Scorsese, I think, but, just beautiful cinematography and great performances. And Fassbinder is really like working off of the Douglas Sirk kind of melodrama and bringing it into the 70s. And it's, I don't know, very fun, also sort of romantic and sad and tragic and, you know, in a fun way, I would say. That movie is sort of about this like, poor working class person who sort of gets taken up as a sort of a pet by this wealthier man. And he ends up winning the lottery and becoming very rich. And basically these wealthy vultures kind of eat him alive. So it's, it's a bit of a reverse, Ripley or something like that. Reverse, Tom Ripley. I don't know.
It's always fascinating though. Loving vintage cinema and things, isn't it always fascinating how current the themes
totally.
Are?
Yeah.
Like the idea that like eat the rich or the rich being like, it actually goes back to Rome. It goes back before ancient, it's always all these themes, all these things that we're dealing with today
definitely
have always existed.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, I think that, Fassbinder's movies are often very much about, because they're interested in melodrama, they're often very much about relationships, but there's always this underlying sort of anxiety about who people really are. I mean, he's definitely, you know, he's growing up in the post World War II Germany, and it's like, wait, there's all these people that were Nazis. Like they're all right there. I don't know. And you can sort of feel that anxiety in his work, in a lot of different ways. I mean, like, he has this movie, Ali, Fear Eats the Soul, about an older German woman who has a romantic relationship with a younger Arab man. And it's sort of, it's based on the Douglas Sirk movie about the age, it's sort of like the age difference romance. What is that movie called? All That Heaven Allows, I think, or something like that. Or is that the
Haynes that rings movie? A bell.
I might be mixing up the titles, but anyways, you have all these sort of like Germans around, like looking, just, there's a lot of like people staring at them as they're like, just trying to, you know, enjoy their life. And they're sitting in the restaurant that Hitler used to eat at every day. And it's like, it's, I don't know. It's very, unsettling. Another good movie. I'm just sneaking in the double recommendations here. Sorry.
No worries.
Okay. One more. Okay. So I guess the last one I'll say is, The Scent of Green Papaya, which is a movie from the early 90s. I think it won the Palme d'Or in 93, but, it was a movie that my mom showed me when I was pretty young. Maybe younger than 10 or something. And it was sort of one of the first art house movies that I saw that made me realize like, oh, this is like, movies could be like this. It's sort of, it takes place in Vietnam, and it's mostly, except it's, it was, I think it was all shot in Paris on sets, but so it sort of has this sort of theatrical feeling a little bit, but it's a very quiet movie. Almost nothing happens for a while. It's all vibes. And then like, there's a bunch of stuff that happens at the very end. It's a very strangely structured movie, but really, really beautiful. And the filmmaker hasn't made that many films, but he just had a movie called The Taste of Things, which was a beautiful French movie with Juliette Binoche, where she's like cooking. It's like 19th century French kitchen. I'm just another, you said three, I said six. recommendation, but really also a very beautiful movie. But The Scent of Green Papaya was important for me. They're very formative. Yeah. So I guess that's all three. Right.
I'm almost tempted to ask you an improv question, sure. Real quick one. Do you have a guilty pleasure? Like a favorite that's like...
Yeah.
A guilty pleasure.
So I the thing is,
because you're quite highbrow.
I
you
guess,
know what I mean. I don't mean to call you highbrow. I don't want to label you, but
well, I was thinking that it's funny because your last question is like things that, what was it, things that,
well, the last one's lesser known, lesser to known. Seek out, yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know if, and you, maybe you, these you are just, all lesser you just, known.
They're all yeah. worth seeking out.
Yeah,
but by the way, Criterion Channel is a very cool thing.
Criterion Channel is really great.
And by the way. Criterion Channel and TV High, same platform.
There you go. And Canopy, what else? You don't need to subscribe to anything
no,
else.
No, you should say no to all the conglomerates.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, your question was about guilty pleasure. I think I'm not, well, some people might say I'm snobby, I guess, but I'm not, there's almost no movies that I dislike, really. I mean, I tend to take movies as they are and try to appreciate them for what they're trying to accomplish. So, you know, I go see all the Marvel movies, mostly, less so recently. But, you know, I watch popular movies as well. I'm not like a... I just think that these are maybe more interesting to talk about.
yeah, no, for sure. But, and you probably enjoy them a bit more.
I do. And they're more related to my filmmaking as well. But I would say so the guilty pleasure that comes to mind as like the one that I love the most is Miss Congeniality.
There we go.
I love that movie so much. It's like sort of propaganda and it's very, very silly. Like the gender politics of it are so goofy and weird, but also like, I don't know. I would say surprisingly good, but I think that seems a little condescending. It's like, it's just like, I feel like the industry doesn't really make that many movies like that anymore that are like that light on their feet and fun and just, I don't know, maybe those kinds of mid-budget movies are going to come back a little bit more as they realize they need to actually make something other than Marvel movies. But anyways, I love that. And my brother recently told me that was like a movie that when I was a kid, I would watch when I was homesick or something. Like it was a DVD that we had that I would just always watch. And my brother recently told me, you only like that movie because it came for free with our DVD player. So we had the DVD.
So it's inside the deep player when you got it, basically.
Yeah. But I just watched it so much. I just thought, Sandra Bullock is incredible.
I was about to say, one thing about Sandra Bullock is...
She's so watchable. She's...
If you don't like... If there's not an attachment where you're like, I just want to be best friends.
Yeah.
Next time we have a game night, can Sandy come over? Yes. Just... She's the world's... buddy.
She's the best. Yeah.
Yeah. And totally just, from the first time anyone, whatever. Yeah. Delightful. Yeah. There. That's a good night.
That. Yeah.
And not even a guilty pleasure. Just,
Yeah.
But no, a film that,
qualifies
as a favorite. Wonderful.
It's I love it.
All right. Well, the next question is a film you feel is underrated.
God. So this, I don't know what. It's hard for me to tell what qualifies as underrated or like this even goes to the underseen kind of thing or something, because now that with streaming and everything, like it's so easy to get access to all of these things. Thinking back to when I was a teenager and like we would go to LACMA to see these movies, and there was no other way to see the movies, basically. Like, Andrei Tarkovsky movies or whatever, you could probably get from the library, but, like, Hong Sang-soo, for example, there was just, like, you wouldn't be able to go see them if they weren't playing in that theater. And now it's, like, very easy to find all of this stuff. And I don't know. Maybe not, though, because
like, now it's, like, streaming services. Now, well, finding stuff, yeah. unless... But then again, if you're willing to pay $4.99, you can probably see anything.
Yeah.
But it's a little, it's the plethora of choices is kind of getting limited again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely. And if you don't, you know, there used to be a killer video store in like one or two neighborhoods, right? Like you go to, in LA, you went to Vidiot's or that one next Cinephile. To the New Art. Yeah. Cinephile.
Yeah.
And, but there's, they can't cover. Yeah. All there is to cover now because you can't have vintage, you can't have Korean, you can't have European. I mean,
have you been to the new Vidiot's?
No.
Okay, so just quick tangent. We talked about in the previous podcast about the art house scene in LA. So that's one of the big ones. You have American Cinematheque, which has the theater in Santa Monica and then also the screen in Los Feliz. And then you have Quentin Tarantino's movie theaters,
yeah,
the New Beverly, and also he just reopened the Vista, which is cool. But Vidiot's opened in Eagle Rock, and they have this beautiful movie theater there. I don't know what it used to be called, but they have a full, like, old school movie theater, and then also a little micro cinema, so they have a second screen kind of, and they have a whole video store, just like the old days. Like, you can rent DVDs and VHS and all that stuff.
Wow.
Probably Blu-rays, great popcorn. Anyways, Vidiot's, big shout out. Great place for independent cinema in LA and for like repertory screenings and stuff. So, okay. Underrated. I don't know what's underrated.
It's a subjective term. Miss Congeniality is, that could have been your underrated.
Yeah, yeah. Like, the other thing I was going to like mention was this filmmaker Hong Sang-soo, who, is also an art house filmmaker and like basically lives on that off the festival circuit. But you can see his movies are, a few of them are out there. The one I saw recently was The Novelist film, which is, from 2022 or something. It's one of the more recent ones that I thought was really, really cool. But his movies tend to be very, character based. They're very simply shot. The Novelist film is in black and white. It's really just about these like sort of funny and weird relationship dynamics. They're very comedic and sort of, sometimes a little bit of magical realist. I guess like sometimes the story, like sometimes he'll play a scene like twice with a variation or something, you know, there's sometimes formal experimentation like that, which can be very interesting. But the Novelist film, I think especially filmmakers might be interested in it. But I would also recommend all of his movies. So that's, you know.
There you go. And as usual, and it falls under lesser known people could seek out too.
Yeah, all I right. guess. Yeah, sorry. I'm
Fair
cheating.
Enough.
Yeah.
No. But the funny thing is, because Miss Congeniality was, I pulled it out of you. That is, sure, it's also underrated. Because in theory, underrated, my intention with it.
Yes, yeah.
And again, people can answer it any way they want. Was, you know, a film that just didn't get acknowledged for its quality, even though it was well known at the time. And honestly, that would go for almost the entire Bullock catalog.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? Because as consistently wonderful as most of those films were, and sometimes even better... But, you know, like when she gets an Oscar nod, it's for like some horrible football, high school football thing that.
Well, she doesn't have the, I mean, she's like the same age as Julia Roberts, I think, and just like seen in a totally different category. And I think like they're different types of performers, but I don't know. I would have loved to have seen, Sandra Bullock get a more of a mix of types of roles, but maybe that was her own choice as well.
No, I'm sure her choices were always limited by her gender.
Well, that's sure that's true. But I bet Julia Roberts was just eating up all the good roles. Right?
Yeah, yeah. No, if it was one. Yeah. I mean, it was a horror. It's still. It'll never be. Well, hopefully someday there'll be equality and blah blah blah. But yeah, you're absolutely right. The way Hollywood worked.
Yeah,
was,
it could be one. It's the Highlander of casting, yeah.
Hell, I just read an article that Sherry Manson, the lead singer of Garbage, their record label was like, well, we can only support one band with a female singer, so it's going to be No Doubt. And we're not going to put any money into promoting Garbage's next album. Yeah, and it's like, really? Even in music, you can only support one woman?
Yeah.
So... You're 100% right.
Yeah.
When Disney was making a movie, the rare movie with a female lead, first it was offered to Julia.
Yeah.
And then it was offered to the people you offered to after Julia passes. Right.
Yeah.
Just like, I mean, I used to always joke that, like, you know, whatever. I used to make fun of actors for, like, oh, well, the name of that film should be Tom Cruise Passed.
Yeah.
And, you know, it fell to whatever, whether it was McConaughey or Charlie Sheen. I don't even know. I can't even remember who the joke was about.
Yeah.
I'm going to enjoy your answer for the third question.
Okay, yeah.
Overrated.
So this is hard because, like I just said, I usually like movies.
All right, I'm going to give you my pitch though. Then
okay, yeah.
You're not saying it's a bad film.
Okay,
you're saying that the awards and or acclaim.
Oh yeah.
Were misplaced.
Okay,
but it could be a film you think is excellent.
Yeah, I'm just gonna shoot for the king and go for The Godfather.
Good one.
I have really had a hard time with Francis Ford Coppola's movies in general. I am very excited for Megalopolis, but I feel like both Apocalypse Now and The Godfather movies are sort of unwieldy in a way that makes it hard for me to get a grasp, I guess, somehow. It's like a thematic grasp. I just often feel like I'm a little bit swimming in them in a way that's not the most fun for me. So they're very well made, obviously. I mean, there's some imagery.
They're excellent.
Like,
they're wonderfully made. But
yeah, and I'll go for a little spicy recent take. And actually, I thought of another underrated movie as well. But then we'll be talking here for 20 more hours. But in the same vein, I recently saw Alex Garland's new movie, Civil War. I don't know if you have heard about
it. I've just heard about it. Yeah.
And it's funny because there's like all this controversy about the politics of it, because it's obviously about the U.S. falling into civil war. So everyone, you know, is kind of like, what the hell is going on here with this movie? And it's about war journalists. It's kind of like there's some ambiguous ethics in it. That's sort of part of the point. But I was just like, it's not even that it's politically offensive. It's just not very well made. People are making the comparison to Apocalypse Now. And I'm like, it does have similar problems for me, I think, where it's just like the cinematic language of it is a little incoherent. Like the camera's doing different things at different times in a way that just doesn't quite feel cohesive. And I don't know. The performances are very good, but, you know, that's not everything.
It's not everything.
Yeah.
No, I have your back on all this. And I'll add that I actually do like the first Godfather. I think the second one is really not great.
I've had people tell me,
oh, Godfather 2 is the first, you know. Like, there's a few people who say it's better than the first. It's the best sequel ever. The only sequel. I'm like, no, come on. It's kind of inane. But anyway, I got your back. I agree that
I do. I like the first one more, but because it is more contained. I mean, I think the parallel storylines is a little bit much. But
I'll never forgive them for having Michael Corleone like be the only guy. Apparently, he was the only guy smart enough to know that Castro would win in Cuba. I find the whole thing annoying and dumb. But anyway.
I am immediately having regret that I didn't pronounce it the way Issa Rae pronounces it in Barbie when she says Godfather. Tell me what happens in Godfather. Anyway, sorry.
I love it.
So I, but you know, this is why I always say that Sofia Coppola is the superior Coppola in the.
Actually, well, because it's actually, not too hard to jump.
Also, yeah. I mean,
although interestingly, we could have a fun discussion about, because you mentioned the Reitmans, but I'm not sure there's any second generation filmmakers who are any who I really appreciate.
So you're not a Sofia fan?
Some of it.
Because to
actually,
me,
Virgin Suicides for me might be her peak, and that was first.
Yeah, yeah. I do like some of Jason Reitman's movies. I kind of, and I actually like Ivan Reitman's daughter. She has a TV show.
Yeah, she's that's good. Pretty, that's and she was on Always Sunny.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But like Reitman, Lawrence Kasdan's kid.
Oh, yeah.
John Landis's kid. Well, I don't know. That's oh, his kid got burned.
That's a whole other. That's yeah. More, yeah. That's a whole other thing. Also, the Euphoria guy. I
was that another.
Yeah.
Nepo, whatever. Yeah, I know people. Yeah. I know it's a put down term. But.
To me, the thing with Nepo babies is that there's all sorts of industries where people do the thing that their parents did, and that doesn't
farming.
Yeah, that doesn't really bother me if somebody's parents are an actor and they become an actor. I think the problem, the Nepo baby problem, is when their parents are studio executives.
Oh, I was going to say I'm going to disagree. Well, I'm going to say my problem is when they say my parents didn't help me make it. Oh, it's all based on my own talent and on my own work.
That's also silly, yeah.
But somebody, and I forget who it is now, but somebody recently, you know, somebody whose parents were famous, I can't remember who it was, but it was an actress, and she said, no, of course my parents helped get me where I am. Like,
yeah.
I you know, if I've been born to a cashier at Target in the Midwest, I wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
I had to work really hard.
Yeah.
But, you know, let's be honest. I remember reading how, what's her name? Kate Hudson was like, well, I was trying to decide, should I go to college or should I act? And I just figured, well, I'll try acting for a little bit, you know, so, but I made it all on my own. And it's like,
No,
you didn't. Like that first meeting, they were like, oh, let's meet with Goldie Hawn's daughter. And let's just, you know, the idea that you got in based on talent, not based on who your parents were.
Yeah. But successful rich people are always delusional, I think. Yes. So, you know, even the ones that did, you know, quote unquote, do it themselves or whatever. Also, you know, people are usually lying about that regardless.
As our I was going to get political now and bring up, you know, the, you know, people who own car companies and live off of government subsidies and things. And the fact that taxes pay for roads and things for the cars to be on.
And then, it's like, and then don't want to give raises to their employees. Yeah.
Well, and also like I'm completely successful myself. It's like, we have an entire infrastructure to create successful companies.
Yeah.
And you should be grateful
to
have been born here where you had all these advantages.
Yeah.
And instead of being like, taxes. It was all me.
Right.
And now I'm going to try to hide the money all I can.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you do have $40 billion, if you get knocked down to $38 billion, like, what are you going to do?
Yeah, that's the end of the road.
I'm pretty sure it wouldn't affect your life.
Yeah, definitely not.
And I'm pretty sure you should be grateful to have lived in a world where there are roads and things.
So I think all that is true. And I mean, what you're saying about roads, definitely, but also what you're saying about people acting like they didn't have it handed to them or whatever, because I feel like even us as Angelinos, like we're doing what we're doing because we were lucky enough to be born or, you know, grow up here. It's like just being around something is enough to make it easier to do it.
Well, and you studied the Middle East and you went to Jordan.
Yeah.
I've been to parts of the world as well where anybody born in that part of the world, they could have a mind that exceeds some of the geniuses. You know, instead of naming one of the evil geniuses, I'll name a genius that I love, Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Okay.
Love him. But if he were born, you know, in rural Thailand where I've been, he would be farming in rural Thailand. Like, right, like that mind would not be an astrophysicist with several degrees and really inspiring a world.
Oh, it might be, but it would be way less likely. I mean, it's just like it's a degree of likelihood. It's like, yeah, you know, I'm sure that Kate Hudson did have to do some work. I mean, that
she had to be good.
She
had to be good.
She's not like, it's not for no reason, but it is also like, it's just way easier. It's the whole thing. But also, like,
if her genetic twin were born in Idaho and moved to LA after finishing high school, not one casting agent would have met with that person.
Yeah.
Whereas Goldie Hawn's daughter got cast, I think it was 200 cigarettes, like right off. Like, yeah, you can, yeah, of course.
But,
of course.
But
we can tell people, maybe Goldie will help us.
Right. Yeah. But the other thing is, like, this is what I meant by that doesn't bother me as much is that, like, when I see the new Knives Out movie and Kate Hudson is there and she's like, there's a part of it where it's like, oh, I just watched a Goldie Hawn movie and there's like something there, you know? And like, I recently watched Marnie, the Hitchcock movie. And it's like, oh, this actress is like, giving me a little bit, Dakota Johnson. And it's because it's her grandma, you know what I mean? And it's like, there is something fun or like, you know, watching Tony Curtis movies and seeing Jamie Lee Curtis. And there's just like those lineages I think are entertaining, which is also the point. Right.
There is a connection for
and,
sure.
And I think, and also maybe there's some, you know, passing down the how to do it kind of trade. Well,
yeah, for sure. There's a trade element of it.
But you know, I mean, it's, if a studio executive's kid is getting a meeting with a casting agent, then that is much stupider to me than Goldie Hawn.
I can name actors I think suck who are famous and wealthy, and it is because their parents were actually worked in casting.
Yeah, like, there you go.
Like, well, if your parent is a casting agent and they want to help pay for a holiday trip, they're going to cast you in Hollywood movies as a kid, and then people recognize your face, blah, blah, blah. All right.
So anyways.
It's a lot of bitterness. Yeah. I apologize for my level of bitterness.
Well, Sofia Coppola's movie, Priscilla, another underrated thing, and also has Kaylee Spaney, who's an amazing actress, was in Civil War, which I just read. Well,
Priscilla
on.
Has that incredibly beautiful human. That guy.
Jacob Elordi.
Yes.
Amazing.
I can never remember his name.
He's really good, yeah.
But
I
could.
Yeah, we were talking about Saltburn before.
But I could just watch him.
Yeah.
I could just watch him.
He's great.
If he just sat down and read the newspaper, if there were newspapers.
Yeah.
I need him. Yeah, if he were sitting in Starbucks just flipping through his phone. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure there's a scene in Priscilla where he's reading newspapers, so you should check it out.
I've been told I would like Priscilla. Yeah.
I feel like that one was a little underrated maybe this last year.
I think it slipped under the radar. Yeah. No Bill Murray. She needs Bill Murray to get her Oscars.
I guess so.
I don't know. That's a toughie.
Yeah.
Another toughie.
Yeah.
Another complicated situation.
Yeah.
Turns out there's not many good humans over 50. I don't know. I'll be quiet because I'm over 50. Should we do the last one? The lesser known to seek out? Or, I mean, you've named a whole bunch of movies to seek out.
You know, I could.
I'm like pre-interrupting you. I'm preempting you. I'm saying you've already named all these movies that people should seek
out. There were so many. Now I'm feeling like I have more ideas for more underrated movies, but I've
Hong I want to hear more overrated.
More overrated. Oh my gosh.
Kidding.
I don't know if I can think
I'm
of
kidding.
More.
I'm kidding. No, it's.
I mean, this. You know, we could talk more about
maybe
Marvel
the whole
movies.
Star Wars thing.
Yeah, those were important when I was a kid, but I.
The first one's
I don't
a good
know what's
movie.
Going on. You know what was good was Andor. That was kind of interesting. That
I have still not been able to watch, but love. I do think Rebel One.
Is it Tony Gilroy? Is that his name?
I can't.
I think he's the writer who's worked on Rogue One.
Rogue One? Thank you. I said Rebel. I thought Rogue One might be the best thing in the entire canon.
Yeah.
Except I really love the very very first.
Yeah.
The film called Star Wars. Yeah. I remove a new hope. When I was 9 years old, I saw Star Wars in the theaters.
Yeah.
And it was perfect.
Nice. Yeah.
And everything since then has been maybe shouldn't have happened.
You're a purist. Yeah.
I'm a purist.
I'm
a bit of a purist.
They're fun. I don't know. Just the whole franchise thing in Hollywood is getting a little bit boring. I think that's the crime that it's really guilty of. Is
that it's just, and that the IP has to be squozen like a dish rag until the last drop. And then after the last drop, somehow they keep squeezing.
And it sucks up so much of the energy from the mainstream industry, where like mid-budget movies, you know, maybe they're going away anyways, but they're getting more, the talent, everyone, like all the actors are in these contracts. It's like, it's well, just
and it
silly.
Actually kind of destroyed the star system.
Totally.
Because now, like,
I think there's a comeback on the way.
There might be a comeback where
I watched the new Dune movie. Have you seen it? The Dune 2?
Not yet. I'm dying to.
I mean, it's just the Timothée Chalamet's and they, Austin Butler, Florence Pugh, you have like all these young actors who are like really commanding screen presences. I just was like, after I saw that, I was like, maybe there's something.
I should drop it. But I'm talking about the fact that like there used to be a time when like I would tell everyone who was a writer,
yeah,
well, if you who wanted to be commercially successful, I'm like, right, well, you should write a Tom Cruise movie.
Totally. But
you have to write a star vehicle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think like Timothée Chalamet in a star vehicle that of a unknown property is actually probably going to be an art house film. You know what I mean? Like he's not going
to. I see. Well, that's because of the mid-budget thing. Yeah. It's gone. It either has to be Dune or.
Now, whereas it used to be if it had Tom Cruise could do secondary people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes,
Tom Cruise, Harrison Ford, Will Smith, blah, blah, blah. Once Hollywood knew that they had attached that name, then they knew they could spend $200 million on the movie.
Right.
And people would buy tickets.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I don't know if you sell tickets with actors anymore.
Well, that's what I feel like it might change.
I hope
so. I don't know. It seems like this Jacob Elordi is another one where it's like, I feel like some of these people are close to being able to sell a movie. I mean, Timothée Chalamet, he might have sold Wonka on his name, right? And that did pretty well. I don't know if people are really going to see Wonka because of Wonka.
But I mean, you are naming like Dune and Wonka, like two of huge still, beloved properties. That's IP.
But that's how you make movie stars, right? Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess. We'll see. Maybe not.
Well, I guess I'm defining a movie star as someone that you don't need original IP for. Right.
But you need to build up to something.
You can just put them in a freaking movie and people go see it because they're like, oh, go see everything with that person in.
Right. But I mean.
Like I used to want to see everything Sandra Bullock was in. Everything.
Right.
I don't care if it's in space. I don't care if it's.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't care if she's an FBI agent at a beauty pageant. I don't care if she's falling in love with Ryan Reynolds. God, who knew he'd become a star? But like, I don't know if that's a good or a bad.
So go back to overrated or not.
But those films that he produces are halfway.
No, he sometimes does.
I like
stuff.
The Free Guy one.
Oh, really? I didn't see it. I heard bad things.
And then the last
no
one with the daddy issues, where somehow Mark Ruffalo played his dad, and it was like
Mark Ruffalo played.
His dad,
Ryan
in, the time,
dad?
In the time travel movie he did that was halfway decent. And it was like,
that's a weird casting.
I'm like, I don't see. Like, how'd you end up a foot taller than your dad? But whatever.
Yeah. And also like, your dad is Italian and you're like the least Italian looking. The
all
most
valid.
Anglo-Saxon person that's ever walked the earth.
Yeah. True. Man, I didn't think about that. I was just like stuck on the...
I love Mark Ruffalo, speaking of which.
Oh, yeah.
So good, yeah.
And he'll do... He's like the one, right? He's the movie star who does the occasional smaller thing, whether it's a...
Yeah, yeah.
He did an amazing film indie thing with Keira Knightley that I love where he plays a music executive.
Yeah, I don't know that.
I wish I should know the name of it because I only saw it because I was trapped in a cruise ship cabin and it was on
the
TV.
That's
and
the
I'm
best
like,
way
this,
to
I'm like, this is freaking amazing. Yeah. It was actually a wonderful film. I should look it up. All right. I think we're good.
Yeah, I think so. What was that? How many hours was that?
That was only 39 minutes.
Okay, good.
And only because I fucked it up. You could have stopped 10 minutes ago. We could have stopped around 20, but I went in and asked shit like guilty pleasure and blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Oh, I'm glad we got Miss Congeniality out there. That was on my list, but I was...
you know?
It's a great movie. I'll watch it tonight.
It makes me realize that she really is. By the way, I'll add in this guilty pleasure... I don't think anyone should snooze on any of the Ocean's movies, especially hers, Ocean's 8.
Yeah, that was very good. And also the Julie Roberts
all women's Ocean's movie. Yeah. It was outstanding. And I think she is the counterpart to George Clooney. She absolutely can carry a film like that.
That is
with all the charm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The charm, the looks, the everything, the charisma. It's all there.
That's actually, George Clooney is a good cop because I feel like what Sandra Bullock needs is the Coen brothers equivalent. Like the movies that George Clooney did with the Coen brothers, she needs a little bit of that.
Come they never asked her in, man? They should have.
I don't know. It's not too late.
They're always using Frances because she's married to one of them.
Yeah.
Not that she isn't the greatest actor alive.
Yeah.
I mean, she's as good as anyone.
Yeah.
Ridiculously good.
Yeah. Like, she's the best.
Meryl Streep level.
Yeah. Frances McDormand level.
Frances McDormand level. Oh, she's so good.
She's great.
Everything.
That Macbeth movie that Joel Coen made, did you see that?
No.
Denzel plays Macbeth, and she plays Lady Macbeth, Frances McDormand. And, oh, my God, they're incredible. Also, visually amazing movie as well. Very, it's a straight Macbeth adaptation, so I understand why, it didn't do well, maybe. But,
but I know you got to put Shakespeare in a high school. I know that's how you make money.
Yeah, but...
The Coen brothers would not do that. Or yeah, that was just one, right? That was their.
And then the other one was just Joel
without Ethan.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
There was a hilarious fake news article written about, like, Ethan reviewed Hamlet and said, like, the untalented brother has made a film, something like that. And everyone thought it was real, but it was actually someone. It was The Onion or something.
Yeah, yeah. That's funny.
All right.
Okay. This was a pleasure.
I will wrap us up by saying... Renee, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And now I will ramble off. If you want to watch Renee's film, Donut, and you definitely should, then no wonder your film was so good. Look at your references. They're all like, you're watching quality shit. You know? I feel like, what an artist takes in affects what comes out.
And, yeah.
You know, if someone's main love is, if they're just all about the Star Wars movies and the Marvel movies, what are they going to make?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're going to make whatever. I'll shut up. This is the Discover Indie Film Podcast. Review it, rate it, subscribe to it. Be nice, be kind. Go to discoverindiefilm.com to learn more. At DIF Wins on social media. And go to Amazon Prime Video and type in Discover Indie Film. And you know what? Amazon, we got up to like 10,000 viewers a week watching that series. And then they kicked us from included with Prime to having to charge 99 cents an episode or $7.99 a season. But, you're spending $8 to watch like 25 fantastic short films that people generally made out of their back pocket. So support indie film. Watch Discover Indie Film. All right. Renee's film Donut won awards at Film Invasion Los Angeles. We hold it every June. Learn more at filminvasionla.com and it's at filminvasionla on social media. Its sister festival, Sherman Oaks Film Festival, hath grown a little bigger. It's every December. You can learn more at ShermanOaksFF.com and it's at ShermanOaksFF on social media. And yeah, go to Watch TV High. Subscribe to Watch TV High. Be kind. I'm told by other people that I should tout that it's socialist. It's actually socialist. 50% of gross receipts are shared evenly among all the creatives. Doesn't matter if you have a 3-minute film or a 4-hour film. Doesn't matter if your film is watched 1,700 times or 0 times. You share equally in the revenue because everyone contributes to the success of that streaming channel. So, all right. I guess I'm going to stop talking. Renee, thank you.
Thank you.
Everyone should watch Donut and enjoy it. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you.